always seems to get involved, doesn't he?
I'm telling you, too many coconuts have hit him right on top of the skull.
Well, I think Anthony will be a great acquisition. He can do it all.
Avery, whose show is this? And we're live. Welcome everybody here to the Lakers Lounge Podcast. I am Anthony Irwin, Senior Lakers Insider, as well as lead Lakers content creator for Offside, joined on this kind of gloomy in my end Thursday Same. Afternoon by your own Weitzman, who wrote a couple of things of note. You can see it behind him there, a Hollywood ending, which is behind me, or which is always behind me in my picture, if you guys are paying close attention. And that gave you some pretty good inroads in writing your latest piece, which details the Lakers' efforts to become Dodgerfied. Yaron, how you holding up?
I'm good. Dodgerfied is a good word. I hadn't used that one. I should have worked that in there. That's pretty good.
it's exactly what, you know, I think a lot of Lakers fans have been hoping for is some of the stuff that you wrote in your piece for Yahoo. And I'm looking forward to diving into that. A quick reminder before we do, please hit that like button. Please hit that subscribe button. Turn on notifications for the show. Turn on notifications for YouTube so you get the notifications for the show. And then if you guys are listening in the morning via podcast, please hit that subscribe button wherever it is that you get them, preferably on Odyssey, but I truly do not care. All right, so let's go ahead and dive on in, and just to offer some background here. Yeah, obviously everybody who hasn't been living under a rock knows that Jeannie Buss sold, and the Buss family sold the Lakers to Mark Walter, who represents Guggenheim, and you now have this cross section of sports legacy brands in LA, between the Lakers and the Dodgers. He is somebody who is very clear. He also owns this group also owns the Sparks as well. So he's very clearly trying to become, you know, James Dolan West, you know, and
well, I would say clearly identify that sports are a growth in area, right? That's I would put it right. Yeah.
Well, I mean, anytime you have in American pro sports, right, there's no relegation. There's kind of this, you know, floor level of what these things are going to be worth moving forward. And then in the case of like the Lakers and the Dodgers, you know, given the points in history that he bought them, there was an insane amount of potential for growth. Right. He identified all of the meat that was left on the bone, for very different reasons, but all the same. And it's led to, at least for Dodgers fans, easily the best stretch in that franchise's history. And now for Lakers fans, let alone for fans that are of both teams, they're kind of hoping, all right, when's our turn? When do we get to this? And it was funny because I was talking to Raj on the show last night about this subject a little bit. We were kind of, you know, alluding to your piece. And I was like, yeah, I forget if it was the last World Series or the World Series before it. And Raj was like, man, that would be nice to try to remember which World Series is the one.
Leading into each other. It's hard to separate. As I got my my Mets mug over here. I'm just wondering what it would be like.
All right. I'll try not to bring it up too much then. I feel like Yankees fans feel worse about the Dodgers than any other.
Well, they became like, the Yankees, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, in the like, it's wild to see on Twitter Yankees fans being like, they spend too much. I'm like, where are we? I guess, you know, Lakers fans are sitting here waiting for when this is actually going to start. It started a little bit, right, in terms of some of the impact that Mark Walter and his group has had on the Lakers. But we're starting to see it really turn up as we head into this offseason. So, you know, if you don't mind, in writing this piece, what would you say is the most notable difference in covering the Lakers for your book, Hollywood Ending, and now covering what the Lakers appear to be turning into, where would you say is like the most stark contrast between what the LeBron era was like and what the Luka era appears to be heading towards?
It's a great question. I mean, I can make it personal and say nobody's threatened to sue me yet. So that's a big difference between the two eras. No, I mean, listen, the reason I was threatened to sue is because one of the notes in the book, and it connects to it, right, was that, I forget even the phrase we use, bare-boned operation.
That mom and pop.
Family, mom and pop, which I always kind of push back on the mom and pop part, even though I think I use this in the story here, but just that's reputation. Mom and pop make it seem like this was required, right? That that the finances were in a specific place, that the Buss family did not have the money to spend on other things. And my understanding mixed with my belief is it was more choice. Like that wasn't true. That was more of a decision they made. I mean, they made a lot of money off the Lakers, almost the Dodgers. And it was a misnomer that, you know, you'd hear often that this isn't their primary business. They're not like hedge fund people who have the $1 billion elsewhere. I should have looked up before I came. I forgot the number. The way the trust was set up, the Buss family trust, they were all getting paid. They were like money. They were all making lots of money individually. They were like basically salaries, for lack of
a better term. They had salaries,
off of, but these were not salaries like, oh, you make $80,000 a year. Like they were dividend. They were making lots of money. So the idea that, you know, if the Buss family, and specifically if Jeannie authorized the spending of money on Ty Lue, right? Authorized the spending to get Ty Lue to be the head coach in 2019, that would have, you know, put her in the poorhouse. Like that's or not
Caruso, you
know, correct. Yeah. Those things are not accurate. These were decisions they make. And the reasoning for these decisions were all bit all over the place. Sometimes it'd be, well, that's not how you're supposed to run things. Sometimes it'd be, well, we're the crown jewel, and we, you know, if we do this, it's not fair to the league, and we care about the whole league as a whole. Sometimes it'd be we can't afford. Just it was all over the place. Long-winded way of saying, I don't think, and we're just starting to see now, but I don't think that's going to be the case. If you want to put LeBron era versus Luka era, Luka is going to have, it seems like, the greatest possible resources around him. Right? Doesn't mean it's going to automatically translate to winning, but to me, one of the more interesting things learning, I'm a baseball fan. I've never reported on baseball, so I don't know the inside stuff. But one of the interesting things reporting on the story and talking to some people around baseball and who know Andrew Friedman and stuff like that is they were saying, and fans will push back on this, but one of the things the Dodgers have is, yeah, they have the big checkbook and they get people to come that way. But more on top of that, players know that the Dodgers are going to get the most out of them based on their medical staff, performance staff, things like that. So again, easy to say that when you can open up the huge checkbook and say, come play with us. Like, yeah, maybe they're not going to choose money over that. But my understanding and what these people are telling me is that's been a major selling point for the Dodgers. So the Lakers, like that, forget even selling point. It's if you have the ability to help players get the most out of themselves. And I didn't go into the piece of this into the piece, but I think JJ Redick, from what we know, is probably a really good match for that sort of infrastructure in terms of his curiosity and how he likes to apply numbers and his, I'll say intellectual curiosity again, right? Like that, I think that's probably a really interesting match and one that could bear a lot of fruit.
Curiosity, I think, is a great term to use here because the Lakers had become so insulated. They had become so, They appealed to the tradition fallacy more than probably any other team in the league. And that is inherently non-curious. That is inherently, nope, we are steadfast in what we believe we should be run. There is no what would it look like if we, and which is ironic because at one point they were ahead of the curve, right?
Yeah.
At one point they you know, Showtime transported the sport to a completely different, you know, realm of entertainment and pace. And
I mean, Jerry Buss, like he was probably like, you know, not exactly. Jerry Buss was Mark Walter, right? Like he was like, when he bought the team, there's a similar parallel. Again, I don't, the spending all that, but a similar idea that no, we're going to do things radically different. You're leaving, there's untapped potential here that you're not getting into, and I'm going to do it. I'm going to use it.
This is often what happens with teams or businesses that get passed down to the kids, right? Where the father was the one that really thought out ahead of the curve. And then the kids operate with how daddy would run this? What decision would daddy make? And it's like, eventually you got to stand on your own 2 feet and try to get out ahead of the curve in the ways that your dad did. So I find all of that really interesting. As far as like the baseball thing, it's funny the way that this all kind of played out, because you know, whenever I would talk before Mark Walter officially bought the team, I would always kind of say on the show, man, it would be nice if Mark Walter bought the team. And I say that because, one, I'm a Dodgers fan. And then, two, early in my career, I actually covered the Dodgers as Mark Walter was kind of taking over. And I covered them during their search that eventually yielded Dave Roberts. And the way that they did that was so different from how all of the Lakers people have been hired, right? Like, Dave Roberts was one of like 20 something people who were brought in to interview when they went through, I think, like 4 or 5 levels of interviews. And there were, and the people who they interviewed, there are coaches or managers who went on to win World Series in their own right, you know, and other people who kind of, you know, have had success, even if it didn't result in a World Series. And you compare that to, like, you know, JJ Redick, who was identified extremely early on as the guy that they wanted to hire. And then, yes, you had like the Dan Hurley thing that happened. But it was really kind of a 2-man race, you know, at most. And then, you know, Frank Vogel was the like 4th choice that they had when they hired him. But even there, that was like they tabbed Ty Lue, and then Lue wanted a little more money than they were willing to pay. And Monty Williams move on to Phoenix, so they didn't really get the opportunity to hire him after the Lou thing fell through. And Jason Kidd was the guy that they really, really wanted, but they were reluctant to hire him because of his legal issues in the past. So they were like, all right, Frank, I guess you get the job. There was never like a process that could be repeated or has been repeated in hiring coaches. And you compare that to how the Dodgers did their thing with Dave Roberts, let alone the results that we got from Dave Roberts since. And it's really kind of interesting. And you know, you also talked in a second ago and in the piece about like this revitalization of the Lakers, rebuilding them, and I guess the question I have is, do you trust that Rob Pelinka is going to be the guy at the middle of this for the entirety of this process?
That's a great question. I guess I'll answer like this. I'll give a few bullet points, put it all together. One, I have no idea, which sounds more vague than it's meant to. So like, say one, I don't know. Two, all indications are, I put this in the piece, and all indications are that there's no, I'll say this, and I'll hire someone else tomorrow, right? But there's been no indications of them talking to anybody else or thinking about anybody else or anyone replacing him. I mean, Pelinka's involved in this search for, well, I'm sure we'll get to these, with these assistant GMs and other executives. Plink is involved. He's more than involved. He's leading it. He's leading the interviews, things like that. He's telling people, he's making calls to, you know, front office agents and stuff like that. He's saying he's working in collaboration. He got that contract extension before and there was a title bump, right? It moved from GM to president of basketball operations about a month or two before the sale went through. There are lots of people, I think, you know, that was sort of, but the timing's not coincidental that he gets that contract extension before the sale goes through, right? That might have been Jeannie Buss looking out for him after all these years together. What I will say, though, is that there are a lot of people around the NBA who are sort of waiting for, like, wait, this is the guy they being the Dodgers, Andrew Friedman, and like, this is the guy they're going to choose to lead them forward. Like, he doesn't seem like, so when Mark Walter, I mean, I'm telling you, not telling you anything, you know, Mark Walter takes over the Dodgers 2 years later, wants to get a new GM, basically says, get me the best guy, I'm going to pay him. Who's he gets Andrew Friedman, right? Like, get me the best. Like, that's what you do. And there are people say, if they're following that collection, path,
frankly, of the best. It was like,
correct, Friedman, correct.
It was Farhan Zaidi. It was correct. Alex Anthopoulos. And
correct. Yes, exactly. Exactly. It was like, just get me the best. So, you know, sounds like the mean people are saying that's Rob Pelinka. He's going to be here and say that's Rob Pelinka. But that's only like secondhand people speculating, who basically asking, not even like speculating based on, I heard of this, is saying, oh, it doesn't make sense. So as far as we know, Rob's the guy. I'll add this, like, I put this in the piece, I thought it was an interesting note. Player agents, like Friedman and them are not talking to Andrew Friedman, the Dodgers people, they're not talking to player agents. So Reeves contract extension, or excuse me, free agency and whatever Luka wants, like, these are not It's not like Luka's agent's on the phone daily with Andrew Freeman, right? So that stuff's still going through Rob Pelinka. So yeah, we're all kind of saying this is going to be interesting. But as far as anyone can tell now, Rob Pelinka is still the guy.
Yeah, one thing that I find kind of telling in that regard, as far as, you know, the league whispers and league speculation, and I think more importantly, action. If there was real confidence that Rob Pelinka was going to be the guy, then people would be signing up to, like, lining up to work with Dodgers 2.0 in the NBA.
This is the thing. I'll cut you off. This is the thing, right? This is two GM assistant GM jobs. They're having trouble filling it, it seems like. And the best explanation I can get is that people are worried that I'm going to tie myself to Rob Pelinka and he'll be out in 2 years. But again, if you like, there's no, I can't figure out any, it doesn't seem that that's based off any anything other than a guess. Like, it doesn't seem like anyone's hinted that. This is some tea leaves reading, right? The tea leaf reading.
It might be a great opportunity. Like, it might, like,
I know, honestly, yeah. That,
people are like passing on it. Like, you know, if you think you're qualified enough for the gig,
you can make the leap, right? Like, make leap up four slots that you wouldn't be able to otherwise, right? I'm kind of with you, honestly. Like, if it were me, I'd be like, okay, you know what? I'll go be Rob Pelinka's guy with the Dodgers, and best case with the Lakers. I keep saying Dodgers in LA, and best case, it works out great. You know, like I'm kind of with you on that.
Yeah, it's all really interesting. So you mentioned, I don't know if you did this on purpose, but you just said in a couple of years, Rob Pelinka might be gone. There's been a lot of speculation. Oh,
yeah.
I was just going to say, there's been a lot of speculation around the league as far as, like, you know, Genie being allowed to run things for some amount of time, whether that be 3 years after the sale, whether that be 5 years after the sale, somewhere in that window. And that, like, 2 year time frame, I don't know if you did that on purpose or whatever it might be.
That was made up, Mark. I threw a number out there. Yeah, I'll say that. Okay. That was just me guessing. Again, no indication. That's what I'm saying. From anyone I've received, not even me being like don't aggregate me type of guy. Like, I have no indication at all that Rob Pelinka is on thin ice, even, right? Other than people just saying, don't they want somebody else? That's it. But that's all I know. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I guess like, In some of the conversations I've had, the speculation is centered around, I never know how to use that phrase, centered around, you know, Genie Buss's timeline here.
Yeah.
Because Rob Pelinka very much is Genie Buss's guy, right? Like, he is the only head of basketball operations that Genie wants to employ. Mm-hmm. And for, like, fair reason, right? Like, obviously, the ties back to Kobe, but he also was the architect of a team that won a championship, and he also went out and got Luka freaking Doncic last year. So, like, at the
end, she trusts him, which I understand.
She really does.
The armchair psychology over, and I it's easy to make fun. She went to war with her family, her literal brothers, you know, brothers about the team. It's understandable that after that, you surround yourself with people you can trust. I get that.
And so I think part of what I wonder the speculation is going on is whether, you know, people are just kind of waiting for Genie's time to come to an end. It might not even be Rob Pelinka specific. It might just be, all right, well, when Mark Walters' people are fully running this and Genie Buss is no longer there to be kind of Rob Pelinka's shield, does that change who was running the Lakers at that point? And You just said you I guess you haven't heard much on that front.
Yeah.
It's all really complicated because, like, even people who know a bunch about that sale wonder, like, wait, where did that clause come from? Like, what and why is it only Genie Buss of all of the Buss siblings who get to benefit from that situation? I mean,
that we can guess a little bit, but that one, you know.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, I assume. It's funny because after the sale went through, I used to say, and this was after the book came out, so I wasn't able to fully dive into this, was like, we never got a full explanation as to why Genie Buss sold the team. Everyone kept saying, well, $10 billion valuation, you can't say no. And to me, that was just, it rang hollow. For one, you know, people misinterpret valuation doesn't mean you're getting that much in cash. Walter already owned, what was it, 27%, whatever. What, like, the amount... They made lots of money, but she was not getting a $10 billion check. I think the number is probably closer to three, whatever it was, which, again, I know, like, it sounds, it's only $3 billion. The other thing is, like, Genie Buss doesn't need money, and Genie Buss has no kids, and it's not like that she needs a generational wealth. We never got a great answer. the best answer, though, and I think to answer your question, the best answer came in that Baxter Holmes story, which, and some of the stuff I alluded to in the book, but he kind of, it was almost like a unintended epilogue to the book, right? And just,
yeah,
there was some of it where she had issues with her sibling, her half siblings, I should say, and clearly wanted, was fine with them being out, as we learned after they get fired, right? So the answer, quite, I think it was just like, I want to keep the team. Like, why was that clause come from? I don't have to sell the team. I don't need, like, we don't, I can keep the team. So if you want to buy this team, I want to stay here as governor for X years, and you got to agree to that. Otherwise, I can keep it, you know, status quo. That's what I'm guessing it was.
In reporting for this, I'm curious if you kind of, in talking to people around the league, what the reaction has been to the sale and the Lakers becoming more modernized and stuff. Are teams nervous? Is there concerned that they'll actually be able to pull this off? Like, where do you have the league at in response to this sale?
Yeah, I think, I'll say nervous. I think people are kind of, the vibe I've gotten is since the sale, right? It's sort of like, oh, if they figure this out, then, like, not that we're in trouble, that's too strong, but like that, this is what the Lakers fully optimized could and should look like, right?
Yeah.
And they've sort of skated for years on, we're the Lakers, and we live in LA, and you put the Lakers on your jersey, on, you get to wear the name Lakers across your chest. I mean, like LeBron, we always say he chose the Lakers. They didn't do anything. He chose the Lakers because of what Jerry Buss built, right? That's why LeBron ended up with in LA. It wasn't, had nothing to do with movies or any of that. So, you know, he wanted to go wear that Lakers uniform. And again, I think I put this in the piece. I don't remember if I did. But I remember asking somebody, like, what's the model? And the person, it was a baseball person. The person goes, it's the Dodgers, right? Like, it was like, what does this look like? He's like, it looks like the Dodgers. If this works, it looks like the Dodgers, the current iteration of the Dodgers, where we're going for a three-peat, first one in 25 years, and baseball might institute a salary cap for the first time ever because they feel like this
is because of
a way to limit us, right? Like, that's what this would look like fully optimized. The only interesting thing I'll add, is that you do get some people in NBA world doing the whole, yeah, but analytics don't work. Baseball and basketball are very different sports, and that model doesn't specifically apply. And I hear them. I think sometimes basketball thinkers are behind the curve a little bit in understanding these things. Like, Andrew, it's sort of like, remember Moneyball came out, and everyone thought, there were two people who realized, either you realize what Moneyball was or you misunderstood. If you misunderstood, you're like, well, it's all about on base percentage, so therefore I need to get guys who have high on base percentage. And the A's, you know, just lucky because they had some of the pitchers and they only, all that stuff. But yeah, if you realize what Moneyball really was, it was, we're finding, you know, marginal, these efficiencies.
Along, yeah, market inefficiencies.
Right? The Dodgers, like, I don't think Andrew Freeman's going to be like, and Farhan Zaidi are going to tell the Lakers, yeah, you know what you should do? We use these models to decide which players are good, and you guys should do the exact same thing. Like, that's not what they're going to do. They're going to figure out what the best way to optimize basketball front office will be, where resources should be deployed, and then do that, right? And I think the people who think, like, well, basketball can't be analyzed the same way as baseball are missing the mark a little bit in what my understanding of the Dodgers guys' specialties are.
Yeah, you kind of alluded to in the piece, or you detailed Zaidi and Friedman's backgrounds, and I think it's important to note that process that you just talked about is something that they've been doing their whole lives in different walks of life, right? I'll just read really quickly, see if I can find it. Oh, here we go. Their diverse backgrounds help. Zaidi has a degree from MIT and a PhD in economics from Cal. Friedman, former college baseball player. What's that?
I said naturally, as one does, you know.
You know. Oh, that old thing. Let's see. So Friedman, a former college baseball player, began his career as an analyst for a private equity firm where his job was to assess businesses, where they're weak, where they're strong, where resources can and should be applied, and then make recommendations. That's exactly what they're doing. Like, that, right, that is exactly they've walked into the Dodgers office or the Lakers offices. They have seen, hey, that analytics department of one guy with a graphing calculator, probably not enough for your analytics department. Let's maybe beef that one up a little bit. Your like pro scouting department being Bill Burka.
I was saying Rob Pelinka.
Yeah, right. Like it basically they haven't had one since they told Ryan West to go away because of his ties to Jerry West.
I mean, I'll interrupt you so people understand. Just, I mean, your listeners might probably do, but like the lengths that being true, the head of the scouting department was Jesse Buss for a while, and Jesse Buss is on the record. This is an NA. Jesse Buss is on the record as saying him and Rob Pelinka. I think after he got fired, he said him and Rob Pelinka were not speaking. I forget the time, whatever timeline he gave, 6 months. But like there was, so Rob Pelinka was not talking to his head of
head of scouting,
You know what I mean? So the nominal head of scouting. So just to give understanding, give listeners an understanding of you know how bare that operation was or is.
Yeah, it had to blow you away in writing in covering for your book and then in detailing this like. How many times did you stop and scratch your head and wonder, like, who thought this was a good idea? Like, why are you running this?
So it's fine. I think by the end, I kind of like, I figured out the why. I just, in there, I almost phrase it like this, right? The why was Jeannie, and I don't want to get too Freudian, but whatever, you know, the psychological scars that she has, I think, were a big part of that. But then figure out the depths to which like that would in those scars impacted decision making, business decision making. That's the part where I guess at some point ceased to amaze me, but I still found it, you know, just wild and incredible.
Yeah. Is there anything else, you know, in kind of watching this all take place with the Lakers? Like you used the phrase a second ago. That the Lakers operated as this bare bones operation by choice, right? That it wasn't like they would love for everybody to think that they didn't do these things because it costs so much money. Scouts aren't expensive. Like it's a few $100,000 a year, you know?
No, and they have the biggest TV local, like it's one simple thing. They have the biggest local TV deal in all of the NBA. I don't know if it's all sports, I don't remember, but just, I mean, the money was there for sure.
And the guy who carried out those walking orders in Rob Pelinka, you know, and was very comfortable, by the way, with a bare bones operation, not just with the Lakers, but as you talked about in your book as well, at his agency, he has always operated in small circles. And I guess one of the questions that I've had in getting ready for this new era of the Lakers organization is Rob is going to bump up against his two kind of core principles, one remaining employed and two operating in small circles, because the Lakers aren't going to want him to continue to do that second thing. Do you think he'll remain comfortable with this, moving forward?
It's a great, I'll say it like this. I had somebody, you know, saying to me again, somebody who doesn't know for sure, but just, you know, guessing or, you know, Rob, we're talking about these two assistant GM jobs that he's talking about. And they're like, Rob's not, the feeling around the NBA is not, even though Pelinka's been kind of positioning it otherwise, but the feeling around the NBA is not that Rob Pelinka's thought process is now, oh, thank God, finally I can build out the front office I want and I can add these deputy executives I want. He's doing that because either he was told to, or he knows smart enough to know that's what the new ownership would want to see, but he's almost acting like, and he's going to position it like he has the handcuffs off, and that is not his personality. I mean, the joke I've made is I think he's going to sound like every press conference we have, he's going to sound like a Sloan panel now, just going to throw out these terms that, like, you know, he knows that what the Dodgers people would like to hear. maybe I'll start throwing some baseball terms in there, like, oh, I think this is a home run signing. It'll be like, I don't know if anyone ever watched Veep, but there's a character, Mike McClintock, is interviewing for an NHL PR job. He keeps throwing hockey terms in. I we're gonna start seeing Rob talk about like war and home runs. So your question to me is like, it's one of the biggest questions in terms of Lakers criminology, right? But it's a big one, right? How's that gonna play out? Don't know, can't know, but I find it. I think it's going to be fascinating.
It's. I think it's the kind of deciding factor of how effective all of this is going to be, right? Like, I always liken the Lakers dipping their toe into analytics as a middle-aged man wearing a jacket that is probably 10 or 15 years too young for them. Right. From, you know, and like, you know, deep down, he's just not very comfortable wearing the thing, when in reality, fashion is just being as comfortable as you could possibly be in whatever clothes it is that you choose to wear. And I feel like Rob Pelinka, you know, who loves himself some younger looking jackets, is sitting here saying, like, I got to do this. I have to do this. I have to. But like you said, not, I wouldn't go so far as to call it kicking and screaming, but I also don't think he's, you know, he's enjoying his vegetables here either. Steve Senior, we have a super comment, which means we have to play the most important sound on the show really quickly. Fuck Washington! All right. So Brian, it always makes me laugh. People's reaction to that, their first time hearing it, but Ryan Lucas asked us in the super chat, did Zaidi or Pelinka offer Steve Senior his job? So this Steve Senior is an assistant GM with the Minnesota Timberwolves. And I thought it was super fascinating and very much worth noting that he was in line for a pretty big promotion in terms of title that the Lakers were willing to offer him. Could you kind of, you know, get into some of the specifics on that front?
Yeah, I don't know a lot more than sort of like the bare bone facts, right? The Lakers, we know Rob has talked about these. I think he officially said assistant GM jobs, right? They say that at the press conference.
He has two of them assistant GM jobs.
So again, I don't know if this is another job that still exists. All I know is before that press conference, at some point, Steve Senior, who's an assistant GM for the Timberwolves, and before that was with the Grizzlies, I believe. He was offered, interviewed, obviously, but offered a executive vice president job. Whether these two GM jobs existed before, I know nothing else. Right, I know the facts. We know these two GM jobs, assistant GM jobs, exist now. I know Steve Senior was offered an interview before and offered an executive vice president job. I know Steve Senior decided to stay in Minnesota. Right, I don't kind of know the middle of like why or what, or was one turned into two. I genuinely don't know. I see the comment is Zaidi or Pelinka. I don't know if you're asking either of them. I mean, I think these things are done in conjunction, but it'd be Rob Pelinka. Yeah. Like Rob Pelinka would be the one offer the job. Steve Senior also knows, I think one of the connections there, because I actually covered that in New York. There was a Kurt Rambis connection. Steve Senior was in, was lower with the Knicks, was with the Knicks assistant coach or something. I forget, during the Phil Jackson Rambis era. I don't know if you want to call it an era, but yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't if I were a Knicks fan. it was interesting because, again, like we kind of talked about, there are these whispers around the league of like, it's a promotion, but is it, you know, fool's gold? Would it be promotion and then go right back to being an assistant GM in a couple of years? I would take the gig and then try to make do with whatever comes out of it on the other side, but not everybody necessarily looks at it that way. I do know that there were probably some Lakers fans who were reading Kurt Rambis's involvement in the interview process and were a little nervous, made a little nervous by it. We know that the Rambises got a pretty big balloon check after the sale here. And I think a lot of Lakers fans read into that probably fairly optimistically or hopefully that was a balloon check to be like, all right, we are moving on to a different era. But Kurt Rambis still being involved is something that I don't think Lakers fans are all that thrilled about.
Yeah, I remember also, I mean, for as of now, I guess, what they're interviewing for a job. It's all, I'm assuming, I don't know. It's like, I would say it's kind of interviewing for his replacement in terms of the point that, like, I guess Rob could do it all by himself, which was basically the Dan Hurley thing. But a lot of these decisions, there's nobody else. So like you want somebody else in the room, quote unquote room. So there's no one else other than Kurt. There's no one else other than Kurt Rambis in the building who would even. I mean, I can name. We don't need to name random, you know, staffers or whatever. But like, Kurt Rambis is the only guy until they get these other guys. Until they get these positions filled, there's nobody else, right? The Joey and Jesse are out. They were sort of the nominal, deputy executives while being the bosses, obviously. Again, there's other people, but yeah, it's Kurt Rambis. So I understand. I understand why Lakers fans would be a little, wait, he's still here. And I'm not saying he's deserving of being involved in this, but I also think, like, again, it's if they need one other person in the room, like that's got to be it. He's got to be the guy.
Yeah, it's not going to be magic, right? So have you heard anything, by the way? Because, like, obviously, Magic's exit with the Lakers the first time around wasn't all that smooth, called Rob Pelinka a snake, said he stabbed him in the back, all that stuff. Now, by way of Magic's involvement with Guggenheim and with Mark Walter, is kind of sort of back in the fold here with Rob Pelinka. Have you heard anything about, like,
I have not.
How it's that great. Relationship
and
is going?
Add to that, we didn't talk about this, and I didn't get into the business side of things, but it connects, right? Lon Rosen, Rosen was the Magic's former agent who was close with Jeannie Buss, still remains close. He was sort of in the whole, that original, like, forum Lakers gang, you know, was running, I forget, was he president? I don't remember his official title, but basically running the business side in the Dodgers. And now he's installed, replacing Tim Harris of the Lakers. So he's back in there, and you've already seen some of the decisions, like moving the G League team and stuff like that, which are Lon Rosen directed business decisions. But yeah, so Lon Rosen, I don't know. I'm assuming he's more Team Magic. I mean, it could also be the sort of thing where, like, they're all so close and know each other for so many years that they all got over it quickly in a group chat. I don't know. Like, Rob and Lon Rosen, Jeannie, Magic, like, they're all they've had lots of dinners together, these people, right? Like, and it's overlapping and a little incestuous. The Rambi, you know, are part of that group. It could just be everyone got over it. I don't know. But I think it's a fascinating question, right? Because it is the fact that Magic is at most one level removed from the Laker power brokers now, and Rob Pelinka is still there, given how that relationship's fractured. It would seem like something worth watching.
Yeah, like Mark Walter goes to Lon Rosen, goes to Magic and asks, hey, what do you guys think of Rob Pelinka?
I mean,
I wonder what Magic would say.
I know. I mean, then again, the NBA, like I would say, some, these guys are operating in such a different world than us sometimes that, like,
yeah,
they get over things. It's just, I'm not thinking Magic has. I have genuinely no idea, right? But I've seen it before, other examples where sometimes they get out of the front office or you get out of sort of the you remove yourself from the war, right? From the battlefield. And it's just like, oh, yeah, okay, we're all good. So I don't know.
They're wired different than I am.
Yeah, they really are. They really are.
There's another super question here, super comment. Alvin28 is asking, should the Lakers steal from OKC or Scout Sports? Yes, they should.
Sure.
but my question, you know, to you on this front is, and this is something I've been thinking about, you know, the Lakers have a cap guide. They have, they have analytics people. They have, you know, it's much thinner now than it should be, but they have people who they could technically elevate into assistant GMs and then backfill their positions. That's one route that Rob Pelinka could theoretically take here. I would prefer what Alvin is kind of talking about here, where, like, you go out into the league and you get people from teams that have been very successful, whether it be the Spurs, the Thunder, the Celtics, so on and so forth, and you bolster your organization by poaching some people. How do you see that playing out?
I mean, I agree they should. That was what that's what they did with the Dodgers. Right?
What the Dodgers did.
It seems to be they're having trouble doing that now is the problem. Again, I don't know. These are things I don't know, right? Maybe they're not offering a huge pay. Maybe we're just assuming they are and they're not. I don't know. I don't know if it's a Rob Pelinka thing. That seems to be what people are guessing. I don't know. But for whatever reason, I'm not saying I don't know if they picked anyone from the Spurs or OKC, but the search is wide, right? Like they have talked to a lot of people and a lot of people's names are incoming. And it's just not happening yet. It doesn't mean whoever gets there won't be great. I don't know, but it does seem like it does seem like they're having trouble filling it for whatever reason. I don't think it's from choosing the wrong people. Then again, they might not be choosing it. Like, you know, are they offering? I'm making up a name. I have no, like, Rob Hennigan is the Thunder. He's a former Magic GM. He's in Sam Presti's front office. Did they offer him a $5 million check and say, come be our assistant GM? I'm going to guess not, right? Probably not. It seems like they're going more for maybe we'll get someone a few rungs lower and try to build them up, right? Which is, again, a little different than what had to do with the Dodgers, where you brought in Farhan Zaidi. I didn't put this in the story, but I was doing research. There's a note that when the Dodgers hired him, when the Dodgers hired Andrew Freeman, I think this was an LA Times story about him, I don't remember where. The Dodgers hired Andrew Freeman, and then within a month, Andrew Freeman is calling Billy Bean, Farhan Zaidi's at the A's, and everyone knows Billy Bean, obviously. And Billy Bean answers the phone. And the anecdote Billy Bean gave is, I said, Andrew, don't do this to me. You can't do this to me. You can't do this to me. Being like, we need to keep this guy, and I can't, the Oakland Athletics can't match your whatever salary you're going to give him. So based on the fact that jobs are being turned down, I'm guessing that that process is not being duplicated, but I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. I just remember when they hired Friedman, the thinking was, you know, Friedman was there with the Tampa Bay Rays and was in a division with the Boston Red Sox and the New York, back when they were the Yankees, right? And he was competing with those teams on a fraction of their budget, and Walter basically was thinking, all right, let's bring this guy over here and bring small market thinking and creativity to a giant market where we can also, you know, drop a nuke if we have to. And we've seen what that looks like here. And I do, it's not one-to-one, right? There is a cap in place in the NBA, and basketball is more like jazz than baseball, which is kind of an assortment of individual performances. But same time, I'm curious. I want to see what this actually looks like when this organization is filled out.
I mean, the equivalent to be, he's not going to go like Sam Presti. It would be hiring Andrew Freeman then from the Rays would be like hiring Sam Presti right now, right? Small market.
Yeah.
The guy, we're going to give him, probably cost $15 million, not even 10, honestly. We'll give him this ridiculous amount of money, and he's going to come do it. He's not going anywhere. But that would be like, that's what he did last time. Maybe he's slow playing a little bit this time. I who knows?
I found a quote a little while back from Mark Walter about this process that he underwent with the Dodgers. And he said essentially something to the effect of, you know, with Ned Colletti, he waited like 3 years to eventually bring in Andrew Friedman. Mm-hmm. And he wishes he had done that a little sooner so that they could have arrived here faster. And hey, that's why, like with this Rob Pelinka stuff and with there being this hesitancy around the league to link up with Rob, you know, who all the way, by the way, not the most trustworthy guy in NBA circles, not somebody that a lot of people trust a whole bunch. I just think that it's a, what's going on here with the Lakers has been kind of a accumulation of a lot of things that are all kind of really worth noting. And I thought you did an excellent job writing about it in your book, writing about it in this piece. Anything else that you want to, that you would hope readers take from the combination of these two pieces?
No, I think that's it. You know, I would add it to the part we talked about this, but someone talking to Farhan, an NBA person, said that, you know, he's not coming in. I think I put this in the piece. They're not coming in being like Matt Ishbia style, like, oh, we know everything, we can fix this. It's more,
That was a great
organizational
anecdote.
Stuff and not about basketball, right? They're not trying to position themselves as basketball experts. Again, to your point, how it mixes up with Lakers, I'll use the phrase again, criminology and, you know, political factors, be fascinating. I think that part is probably different than the NBA. I think that stuff, that might be a thing they might have to adjust to more as opposed to the nature of the sport, right? In terms of how the sport is analyzed, but rather the personalities and the Game of Thronesian nature that the NBA world is, right? I think that might be something that they might have to, there might be more of an adjustment period there.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Yaron, this has been a lot of fun. Thank you very much for hopping on very, very short notice. Anything else that you want to plug as I'll bring it up for you, Hollywood ending, the dreams and drama.
Dreams and drama. There we go. Yeah. How dare you not know the subtitle by heart. How dare you?
I remember back in the day, like, I forget when subheads became popular, but now they're like, I'm curious when we're going to go back to just headlines on a book. Yeah. This book is excellent. It is really, really good. This piece was excellent. Anything that you want to plug on top of that stuff?
Nah, if you like this stuff, I mean, I'll say this, you know, I think your listeners don't like, I don't think it's everywhere. If you're listening to this show, you'll like the book, which I know my job's to sell it, but you'll like it. It's a bit written for you guys. Otherwise, you can just social media stuff and see my work there.
All right, so that's going to do it here for this episode of the Lakers Lounge. I will be back here in the lounge tomorrow with Pete. I'm sure we're going to talk about some of that stuff or some of this stuff as well. Have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's, and we will talk to you guys tomorrow.